Everyone to the bidder webcast for the October 2024 auction under AEP Ohio's competitive bidding process. My name is Katie and I work for NERA Economic Consulting. NERA serves as the auction manager for AEP Ohio's CPP. Presenting with me today are my colleagues Rachel and Abigail. In today's presentation, we're going to provide an overview of the competitive bidding process and changes under AEP's new electric security plan. Details on the qualification and auction process, and we'll also cover information specific to this auction, including the products available and the calendar with the deadline. So all lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise, but you can ask written questions throughout the presentation. To ask a question, please locate the Q&A panel on the right-hand side of your screen, type in your question, select all panelists in the drop-down and hit enter. If you experience any technical difficulties during the call today, you can also use that Q&A panel to let us know and someone will be in touch. So you know the presentation as well as all questions and answers will be posted to the CBP website. So I'm going to start with a disclaimer that any statements herein describing or referring to documents and agreements are summaries only and are qualified in their entirety by reference to such governing documents. The governing documents include orders from the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio in the cases provided in this first bullet on this slide. So first, on April 3rd, 2024, the commission issued an order in case number 2323ELSSO, authorizing AEP Ohio to implement its 5th electric security plan. Second, the commission issued a finding and order in case number 23781ELUNC, requiring the EDUs in Ohio to implement a capacity proxy price mechanism related to the capacity auction delays under PJM's reliability pricing model. And I'm going to provide additional information on both of these orders later in the webcast. Other governing documents include the CBP rules, which are the bidding rules for the auctions, the Master Standard Service Offer or SSO supply agreement, the rules and protocols for participation by associated bidders, and the Part 1 and Part 2 applications. And all of these documents are available on the CBP website, which is aepohiocbp.com. So as I mentioned, NERA Economic Consulting serves as the auction manager for the auctions under AEP Ohio's competitive bidding process. Our role is to be the single point of contact with bidders. This means that all questions from potential bidders must be referred to us. NERA's role is to ensure the CBP rules approved by the commission are followed and that bidder qualifications are evaluated equitably and fairly. We also administer the auction and we submit a report on the results to the commission. The agenda for today's presentation is as follows. In the first part of the presentation, I'll provide an overview of the regulatory background and then the auctions generally. I'll give a description of the product design and the contract. I'll then pass the presentation to Abigail next to continue with the overview of the CBP website and the application process details, including the requirements to qualify. Next, Rachel will continue the presentation with information regarding bids and bidding in the auction. And then at the end of the presentation, we will plan to respond to questions as time permits. So on January 6, 2023, AEP Ohio filed an application seeking to implement its 5th electric security plan, or ESP5, and continue with a biannual auction process for full requirements products. A joint stipulation and recommendation was filed by AEP Ohio and other parties to the proceeding on September 6, 2023. Through an April 3rd, 2024 order and opinion, the commission modified and approved the stipulation and authorized AEP Ohio to implement ESP5. The joint stipulation included a capacity proxy price mechanism and adjusted the ESP5 period to end on May 31st, 2028. Other changes to the auction related documents through this ESP5 proceeding were minor. On August 27th, AEP Ohio filed compliance updates to the product schedule, the CBP rules, and the master SSO supply agreement to implement a capacity proxy price mechanism beginning with this auction and to adjust the schedule for the approved 4-year term. These updated product schedule rules and agreements have not yet been approved by the commission and are subject to change, but the information that's provided in this presentation is based on those compliance updates filed, and it anticipates that this October 2024 auction will seek to procure 3 products, so 17 tranches of a 12-month product with a supply period of June 1, 2025 to May 31st, 2026, 17 tranches of a 24-month product with a supply period beginning June 1, 2025, and then 16 tranches of a 36-month product with a supply period beginning June 1, 2025. For the upcoming auction, will be held on October 29th, 2024. This is the 3rd of a series of 8 full requirements auctions to be held under ESP 5. The first 2 were authorized to be held in November 2023 and March 2024 prior to the approval of ESP 5 through separate orders by the commission. So as I mentioned, as filed, the product schedule includes 3 products to be procured this October, for 12-month, 24-month, and 36-month terms. So notably, the results of the base residual auction under PJM's RPM for the 26-27 and 27-28 delivery years are not expected to be known prior to 5 business days before October 29th. And so under the CBP rules, a capacity proxy price is announced for these 2 delivery years that are relevant to the 24 and 36 month product. And so I'm going to provide the capacity proxy prices and also an overview of the true-up mechanism for suppliers once we get to the contract section of this webcast. So in the prior auction held in March 2024, a 12-month product was available for a supply period beginning June 1, 2024. There were 9 registered bidders, and the range for the starting price or round one price was between $100 and $135 per megawatt hour. The 50 tranches available were all procured at the auction, and the clearing price was $67.17. The tranches that are available are load following slice of system full requirements tranches. Each tranche represents a fixed percentage of the load of SSO customers. SSO customers are customers who take retail generation service from AEP Ohio, excluding PIP customers, who are customers on AEP Ohio's percentage of income payment plans. The delivery point is the P node that's provided here on this slide. And lastly, SSO suppliers or winners in the auction will assume the responsibility of the load serving entity in PJM, including the responsibility for scheduling SSO supply and making arrangements for delivery of SSO supply. As I mentioned on the last slide, the load of SSO customers is divided into a number of tranches. The tranche targets, or the number of available tranches in this auction, is 17 tranches for both the 12 and 24 month supply periods and 16 tranches for the 36 month supply period. So each tranche represents 1% of the load of SSO customers. So that means that a supplier that serves a single tranche of the 12 month product, for example, provides all necessary services to meet the needs of 1% of the load of SSO customers for 12 months beginning on June 1, 2025. There's a load cap of 40 tranches in the auction, which is a limit on the number of tranches a supplier can bid on and win, thus win across all the products in the auction. So the format for the auction is a clock auction. In this March, again, there will be multiple tranches available for 3 products. Each product is for SSO load for a given supply period. There are multiple rounds, and in each round, suppliers will state how many tranches they want to supply at the going prices that are announced by us, the auction manager. Then from one round to the next, the auction continues, and the price will decrease or tick down for a product if there is excess supply for that product. An excess supply is when suppliers bid to supply more tranches than the number of tranches that are available for that product. Switching between the products is allowed, and the auction will close when the number of tranches bid is equal to or less than the number of tranches that are being procured for each product, so that no price ticks down. There's no sealed bid round. Instead, bidders will supply exit prices as they withdraw tranches throughout the auction. And then the auction establishes a single clearing price for each product that is applicable to all tranches and all winning suppliers for that product. And we provide on this slide the PLC in megawatts for SSO customers, excluding PIP customers. This PLC figure is based on the 5 highest coincident peaks experienced by PJM in the prior year. So the PLC is 1,462 megawatts. And below that figure is a megawatt measure that we're providing for reference and informational purposes only. And I say that because the amount of actual quantity to be delivered will depend on many factors, including migration of SSO customers. Suppliers are paid the auction clearing price for each megawatt hour of supply during the delivery term, times a seasonal factor, and the seasonal factor is expected to be 1. So this next slide lays out the key events over the next 2 months. The application process is in 2 parts. First, applicants will submit a part 1 application with their qualification materials beginning September 16th, and that's when the online part 1 form also becomes available. The part 1 application must be submitted by noon on the part 1 date on September 26th. Applicants that are qualified pursuant to a successful part 1 are notified that they can submit a part 2 application on the part 1 notification date, which is October 2nd. The following day, applicants can begin submitting the part 2 application, and that includes posting pre-bid security. And the part 2 application is due on October 16th. Then bidders are notified whether they're registered bidders eligible to participate in the auction on the part 2 notification date on October 23rd. So by that date, registered bidders will receive a bidder manual and they'll be able to start preparing for participation in the auction. Applicants will have an opportunity to practice using the auction software and bid submission procedures in a trial auction on October 24th. And this is also the date when we'll provide the round 1 prices. Then on the following Tuesday, that's October 29th, the auction will be held. We're going to make several announcements throughout the process, and that includes announcing the minimum and maximum starting prices. That announcement will happen by September 16th. And then we provide an update to seasonal factors and megawatt measure if necessary by October 3rd. So as I mentioned, the application process is in 2 parts. Both parts are completely online. Applicants will submit the part 1 and part 2 application materials through online forms. With part 1, the materials provided include contact and company information for the bidder and supporting supporting documents, including financial information. Applicants are also required to upload what we call inserts. These inserts are provided by us in Microsoft Word format for you to complete, and we'll go into more detail in an upcoming section on the exact inserts that are expected from each bidder. The part 2 application materials include providing an indicative offer at the minimum and maximum starting prices, again, uploading inserts and certifications, and then also providing either a pre-bid letter of credit or cash in an amount that supports the indicative offer. And Abigail is going to go through all of the requirements of part 1 and part 2 in her section. And of course, notably, there's no hard copy versions of any documents required in the application process. The results are contingent on final commission approval. So the auction manager will submit a confidential report on the auction results to the commission on the day the auction closes, and then the commission will issue a decision within 2 business days of auction close. If the commission does not act within this window, then the auction results are deemed accepted. The commission may publicly release the auction clearing price and the names of the winning bidders from the auction. Within 3 days of the commission's acceptance of the results, the master SSO supply agreement will be fully executed, and winning bidders must fulfill creditworthiness requirements under the contract. So bidders are subject to load caps. First, a bidder cannot bid or win more than 80% of the tranches available at the start of the auction. Second, the amount a bidder can bid and win in a given auction could be further reduced by the credit-based tranche cap, and this depends on the credit ratings of the bidder or its guarantor. And so the credit-based tranche caps have been increased for this October 2024 auction and are provided in the table here on this slide. So that completes the overview section. I'm going to cover a few slides now in part two here with details on the product design and the contract, including the new capacity proxy price mechanism. So SSO suppliers or winners in the auction will assume all responsibilities of a load serving entity in PJM for the percentage of the load they serve and are responsible for providing full requirements service that includes energy, capacity, and ancillary services. And that's for all SSO customers, excluding PIP customers. SSO suppliers bear all costs that are associated with this responsibility. Full requirements service and the LSE obligations of SSO suppliers are defined in the master SSO supplier agreement. In particular, please see attachment F of the agreement for a sample PJM invoice. It contains each billing line item and an indication of whether it's the responsibility of the SSO supplier or of AEP Ohio. So under the CBP rules, a capacity proxy price will be established for a delivery year if the results of the BRA under PJM's RPM for that delivery year are not expected to be known by or prior to 5 business days ahead of the SSO auction. If a capacity proxy price is established for a delivery year relevant to an available product in the auction, then a true-up mechanism that's described in attachment H for the master SSO supply agreement will become effective for that product. And so all prospective suppliers should carefully review attachment H to understand the contract, the construct, excuse me. So as described in attachment H, the true-up is going to take place in the delivery year for which a capacity proxy price was established only. And through an additional line item on the invoice, the supplier will be paid or will pay the difference between the actual capacity price charged through PJM's RPM and the capacity proxy price that was announced for that product. And then that difference is multiplied by the supplier's share of the capacity obligation for each day. So essentially, winning suppliers are made whole for the difference between the capacity proxy price that's established now, and I'm going to provide on the next slide, and then the actual capacity price they are ultimately required to pay PJM. And again, the true-up occurs only during the delivery year for which a capacity proxy price was established. So in this October 2024 SSO auction, the capacity proxy prices for the 2026, 27, and 2027, 28 delivery years will be $270.35 per megawatt day. And this is equal to the BRA results of the 2025-26 delivery year. The auction manager can update these capacity proxy prices for a delivery year. And if it is updated, that update would be made no later than 5 business days prior to the start of the auction at the end of October. And so this final slide in this part two provides an overview of the credit requirements under the agreement. There are 2 distinct credit requirements, and corresponding to those requirements are 2 distinct unsecured credit lines that an SSO supplier or its guarantor can qualify for. So first, the credit requirement is the independent credit requirement, or ICR, and that's an amount per tranche that declines throughout the term of the agreement. And then corresponding with this ICR requirement is an unsecured credit line that's called the independent credit threshold. and that can be used to meet the ICR. So whether a supplier or guarantor qualifies for the independent credit threshold, it depends on criteria that's provided in the agreement. And there's going to be a creditworthiness evaluation that's conducted during the Part 1 application process. And that creditworthiness evaluation will provide the bidder with some information regarding how they or their guarantor would be treated in regards to credit under the contract. The second requirement is the mark-to-market exposure. So that exposure is based on the difference between the prevailing market prices and the market prices that were in effect on the date of the auction or the date the auction is completed. To meet this second requirement, a supplier or guarantor can also depend on a credit limit that can be granted, again, based on rating and financial criteria that's provided in the agreement. So under the terms of the agreement, a supplier can use a guarantee as long as it's a creditworthy guarantor, and a supplier could also post a letter of credit. So a form of guarantee and a letter of credit are provided as attachments to the master agreement. And also, I guess a supplier could also post cash to meet these credit requirements. So with that, I'm going to turn the presentation over to Abigail to continue with part 3.
Thank you, Katie. Hi, everyone. In this next section, I'll provide you with an overview of the AEP Ohio auction website. The AEP auction website can be found at aepohiocbp.com. It's a central source of information where bidders can find announcements being made by the auction manager, the schedule for the current auction and important dates, auction documents, as well as data provided by AEP Ohio. Bidders can navigate through different pages of the website using the panel on the left-hand side of the screen and clicking the appropriate tab name. And just to point out, a link to the application website is also available at the bottom of the navigation bar. Clicking on the information tab displays the link to access the documents page along with links to the announcements page and the FAQs page. On the documents page, bidders can find a number of files such as the auction rules, the master SSO supply agreement, and pre-bid security documents. Also on this page are the illustrated versions of the Part 1 and Part 2 applications. Today's presentation will also be posted here on the documents page and will likely be made available later today. Clicking on the Data Room tab will take you to a page where AEP Ohio has made available hourly energy data, customer count data, PLC and NSPL data, as well as monthly switching statistics. The information on this page is updated on or before the 20th of each month. Also available on the Data Room page is government aggregation data, which is updated less frequently. To contact the auction manager, you may click on the Contact Us tab of the website. Here, you can register to receive announcements about this auction as well as any upcoming auctions. You can also register to receive login credentials to access the application forms to participate in the auctions. If you have a question, you can click the Ask a Question link and fill out the required fields. Your question will be submitted to the auction manager, and we aim to provide a response within 2 business days. You may also submit any questions to us by email at aep-cbp@nera.com. In this next section, I'll provide an overview of the application process for purposes of participating in the upcoming AEP auction and review some of the information that bidders will need to provide in their online Part 1 and Part 2 forms. The online application to participate in the auction is completed on a website separate from the AEP-CBP site. You can access the application site directly by going to aepohiocbp-application.com. And as mentioned earlier, a link to the application website is also available at the bottom of the navigation bar on the AEP-CBP website. Ahead of the Part 1 window opening, new bidders who have not participated in the AEP auctions should register for an account on the AEP-CBP website by clicking Contact Us and then Register for an Application Account on the left-hand side of the webpage. Alternatively, bidders can send us an email at aep-cbp@nero.com to request login credentials, making sure to provide the contact information shown on the slide here. If you're currently an account holder, the auction manager will automatically send you your login credentials and you don't need to re-register for an account. Current account holders are considered returning bidders that have qualified to participate in an AEP auction in 2022 or later, as well as any entities that registered for an account in 2022 or later but have not previously qualified. Please note that all account holders, whether you're new or returning bidder, will need to activate their account by following the instructions provided in the account activation email. The auction manager will send instructions for accessing and completing the online forms to account holders prior to the Part 1 window opening. Next, I'll provide an overview of the Part 1 application requirements. I first want to point out that a bidder's qualification status from a prior auction held under ESP4 does not carry over. This means all bidders, even bidders that have qualified in a prior auction, must submit the full Part 1 application. The first section of the online Part 1 form will ask you to provide contact information for the bidder and for various representatives, including the representative of the applicant and a legal representative in Ohio. In this section, a bidder may also choose to name nominees to be included on all correspondence with the auction manager. The next section of the online Part 1 form requires a bidder to write information related to its status as a PJM member and to indicate whether it is currently a market buyer, market seller, and whether it is qualified as a load-serving entity. With the Part 1 application, bidders are also required to make a number of certifications agreeing to the auction rules, agreeing to the terms of the Master SSO Supply Agreement, and agreeing to keep certain auction-related information confidential. Bidders also need to provide financial statements and credit ratings for the entity on whose financial standing the bidder is relying. Please note that additional information will be required for a foreign bidder, as well as bidders relying on the financial standing of a foreign guarantor. There is also a section in the online Part 1 form where bidders may propose modifications to the pre-bid security instruments. These would be the pre-bid letter of credit, the letter of intent to provide a guarantee, and the letter of reference. These credit instruments may need to be submitted with the bidder's Part 2 application, so this section in the online Part 1 form provides bidders with an opportunity to propose changes to the standard form of these documents. AEP Ohio will review any proposed modifications and a response will be provided to the bidder indicating which changes are acceptable and which are not. A preliminary list of acceptable modifications to pre-bid security documents can be found on the documents page of the auction website. Any modification already on this preliminary list may be used by any bidder, so please share this list with your bank. If a modification is accepted for one bidder, it will be made available to all bidders on an optional basis through this running list. Bidders will also be required to fill out inserts for the Part 1 and Part 2 applications. Inserts are submitted alongside the rest of the application as separate Microsoft Word documents. All inserts can be found on the auction website at aepohiocbp.com on the Documents page under the Information tab on the left-hand side of the screen. These inserts for the Part 1 and Part 2 applications are available in the correspondingly named zip files shown on the screen here. And just a note, there are instructions for what is considered an acceptable signature within each insert template. This next slide gives an overview of the inserts that may be required with the Part 1 application, to whom they apply, and whether notarization is required to complete them. All bidders are required to provide the representative designation insert, the representative responsibilities insert, and the certifications insert as part of their Part 1 application for each auction. As this is the first auction held following the Commission's approval of the new ESP, all bidders are also required to provide the legal representative insert. This insert will not be retained in the online Part 1 form for returning bidders in this October 2024 auction. A few inserts are only required in certain circumstances, which are further outlined in the illustrative Part 1 form. For example, the PJM requirements insert should be provided if a bidder is not currently a member of PJM in good standing or is not qualified as a market buyer, market seller, or a load-serving entity. If a bidder satisfies all requirements of the Part 1 application, that bidder will receive a Part 1 notification from the auction manager, and they will then be invited to submit a Part 2 application. New bidders and returning bidders must fulfill the same requirements in the online Part 2 form. In the Part 2 application, bidders submit their indicative offer and preliminary interest in the available products at the minimum and maximum starting prices, provide pre-bid security, and make a number of additional certifications. Foreign entities will have additional requirements to complete with their Part 2 applications as well. I'll next review in more detail some of the requirements of the Part 2 application. The online Part 2 form will require bidders to provide an indicative offer. The indicative offer is the maximum number of tranches that a bidder is willing to bid across all available products at the minimum starting price and at the maximum starting price. The indicative offer at the maximum starting price is used to determine the amount of prebid security a bidder must provide with its Part 2 application. In turn, this value sets the total number of tranches that a bidder will be able to bid in the first round of the auction. This is referred to as a bidder's initial eligibility. A bidder must also provide its preliminary interest in each product. Preliminary interest is the number of tranches that a bidder is willing to bid for each product at the maximum and minimum starting price. A bidder submits its preliminary interest at the maximum and minimum starting price for each product separately. A bidder's preliminary interest in a product is not binding and is only informative. The preliminary interest in a product at a given price shouldn't exceed the indicative offer at that price. However, the sum of a bidder's preliminary interest across all products can exceed the indicative offer at the maximum starting price. For example, a bidder may choose an indicative offer of 10, meaning they are only willing to win a total of 10 tranches across the 12-month, 24-month, and 36-month products at the maximum starting price. However, that bidder can state its preliminary interest in each product is separately 10 tranches. This means that a bidder is only willing to win 10 tranches total, but those 10 tranches could be all tranches of the 12-month product, all tranches of the 24-month product, all tranches of the 36-month product, or any combination of these three products. Bidders will also need to submit prebid security with their Part 2 applications in the form of cash or prebid letter of credit. The amount of prebid security is equal to $500,000 per tranche of a bidder's indicative offer at the maximum starting price. Please note, bidders may also be required to provide additional prebid security in amount of $300,000 per tranche if that bidder is relying on the financial standing of a guarantor or if the entity on whose financial standing a bidder is relying does not meet the minimum credit requirements under the Master SSO Supply Agreement. Bidders will also need to make a number of certifications with their Part 2 application, certifying to comply with the association and confidential information rules, and certifying to keep information related to the auction confidential. As a reminder to bidders choosing to provide a prebid letter of credit as their prebid security, the prebid letter of credit can only be provided by the issuing bank to the auction manager as an electronic PDF via email at aep-cbp@nira.com. Hard copy versions of the prebid letter of credit and any additional required prebid security will not be accepted. Any required additional prebid security must be uploaded to the online Part 2 form. And as a reminder, please review the standard forms of the prebid credit instruments ahead of the deadline for Part 1 applications, so you may propose changes to the standard forms if you so choose. Also with the Part 2 application, bidders must certify that any bid submitted in the auction is binding. And lastly, foreign bidders or bidders relying on the financial standing of a foreign entity must provide the executed versions of the draft documents that they provided with their Part 1 application. And please note that these executed versions must include any changes that were required by AEP Ohio. And just like in the online Part 1 form, the online Part 2 form will require bidders to upload inserts. Bidders submitting cash as prebid security will need to provide the cash certification insert, while all bidders must provide the Part 2 certifications insert. And again, these inserts are available on the AEP-CBP website. Instructions for signing is provided within each insert. And with that, I'll now pass things over to Rachel.
Thanks, Abigail. Now I'll end today's presentation by providing some information on the bidding process in the auction. Now, if a bidder satisfies all requirements of the Part 2 application, that bidder will receive a Part 2 notification from the auction manager and will be eligible to bid in the auction. And bidders will submit their bids in the auction using an online auction software. As we discussed earlier, the format of the auction is a descending clock auction that features multiple products and multiple rounds of bidding. What we mean by multiple products is that tranches for all products in the auction are cured at once. So the tranches for all three products in the auction, that's the 12-month, 24-month, and 36-month products, are procured simultaneously. What we mean by multi-round design is that in a given round, prices will be provided to bidders, and bidders will state the number of tranches of each product they wish to supply at those prices. To the extent that for a given product, there are more tranches that are bid than there are tranches available, the price for that product will tick down in the next round, and bidders will have an opportunity to bid again at those lower prices. Now, during the course of the auction, suppliers also have the ability to switch their bids from one product to another. So not just reacting to the absolute value of the price going down for a product each round, but suppliers can also switch their bids between products based on the relative prices of the products. Each round in the auction is made up of three phases. That's bidding, calculating, and reporting. Bidders state the number of tranches of each product they're willing to supply at the going prices for that round during the bidding phase. Once the bidding phase ends, the calculating phase begins, and the auction manager tabulates the results of that round and calculates the next round's going prices. After the calculating phase ends, the reporting phase begins, and at this time, bidders will be provided with the going prices for the next round, and bidders will also be provided with the results of their own bid in that round. Note that bidders will have access to the results of their own bid, but will not have access to the results of another bidder's bid. During the reporting phase, bidders will also be provided with a range of total excess supply. This is a range of excess supply across all three of the products. At the end of the reporting phase, the bidding phase for the next round begins, and the cycle continues until the auction ends. If it's determined that there is insufficient supply to ensure competitive bidding, the auction manager can reduce the auction volume. The specific criteria that could lead to this reduction will be determined ahead of time prior to the auction, but this information will be kept confidential, will not be provided to bidders. However, once specific criteria have been met, the discretion to reduce the volume will be eliminated, and the values of the tranche targets will hold through the end of the auction. Now, a bid in round one is the number of tranches of each product a bidder is willing to supply at the round one prices. The starting prices, or the round one prices, are provided to registered bidders ahead of the auction. And I'll note that it is not necessarily the case that the starting prices will be the same across the three products. In round one, a bidder cannot bid a total number of tranches across all of the products that's greater than its initial eligibility. And a reminder here that a bidder's initial eligibility is equal to its indicative offer at the maximum starting price that was provided in its online Part 2 form. In round one, a bidder can bid a total number of tranches across all products equal to its initial eligibility, or a total number of tranches across all products less than its initial eligibility. But a bidder cannot increase the total number of tranches it bids across all products from round to round. So a bidder choosing to bid a total number of tranches across all products less than its initial eligibility in round one will only be able to bid that same total amount or less in subsequent rounds. However, remember that a bidder can switch its bids. So a bidder can increase the number of tranches bid on a particular product by reallocating tranches from one product to another. After the bidding phase ends, the auction will enter the calculating phase, and the auction manager will then tabulate the results of the round and calculate the next round's going prices. Then this information is made available to bidders in the reporting phase, and this slide gives an example of the information that's provided to bidders at that time. Bidders will be provided a range of total excess supply, and again, this range of total excess supply aggregates the excess supply for all products, and it includes tranches of free eligibility. Now, we won't discuss the concept of free eligibility during today's presentation, but more information on free eligibility will be provided to registered bidders prior to the auction. The actual value of total excess supply will fall within the given range that's reported. Now, in this example, the range reported to bidders is 106 to 110, which means the actual value of total excess supply across all three products could be equal to 106 or 110 or any value in between. Bidders are also provided the going price for each product for the next round. In the example here, you see the going price for each product for round two. Note that the prices are illustrative and they are the same in this example, but this will not necessarily be the case during the actual auction. Bidders will also have access to the results of their own bid, but as I said earlier, bidders will not have access to the results of any other bidder's bid. So information regarding a bidder's bid, identity, eligibility will not be accessible to other bidders. Now, bidders that satisfy all requirements of the Part 2 application, as I said earlier, will receive a Part 2 notification from the auction manager. Registered bidders will also receive with their Part 2 notification a bidder user manual. The bidder user manual will provide the decrement formulas used to calculate the going price for each product from round to round. And remember that the price for a product ticks down when there is excess supply for that product. So now starting in round two, in response to a reduction in price, bidders may choose to leave their bid the same as in the previous round. A bidder could choose to withdraw tranches from the auction. A bidder could choose to switch, which means it would decrease the number of tranches bid on a product while increasing the number of tranches bid on another product. Or a bidder could choose to do both, withdraw and switch. Again, a bidder cannot bid more than its eligibility across all products. In round one, this is the bidder's initial eligibility. In round two, a bidder's eligibility is equal to the total number of tranches across all products that the bidder bid in round one. In round three and in subsequent rounds, a bidder's eligibility is equal to the eligibility from the prior round minus any tranches that the bidder withdrew from the auction. On the next few slides, I'll provide more information about how a bidder can bid in response to a reduction in prices. Specifically, I'll review some circumstances in which a bidder would be required to provide some additional information as part of its bid. On this slide, I'll discuss withdrawing tranches, and this is when a bidder reduces the total number of tranches bid across all products. In this example, the bidder was bidding on a total of 32 tranches in round one, and after a reduction in prices, the bidder is bidding on a total of 31 tranches, and you can see it's reducing the number of tranches it was bidding on the 36th month product. When a bidder withdraws tranches of a given product, the bidder will be prompted to provide what's called an exit price for the number of tranches it's withdrawing of that product. An exit price is a best and last offer for the tranches of that product that are being withdrawn from the auction. An exit price must be greater than the current round's going price for that product, but below or equal to the previous round's going price for that product. In the example here, a bidder is withdrawing one tranche of the 36-month product, where it was bidding on 10 tranches, it's now bidding on 9. The bidder submits an exit price of $119.25, which is above the going price for the 36-month product of $118.75, but below the previous round's price of $125. And we'll discuss this a little more later on, but there is a possibility that the withdrawn tranche will be retained, such that even though the bidder is requesting to withdraw the tranche may stay for purposes of filling the tranche target for the product. If for the 36-month product, say many bidders are either switching their tranches out or withdrawing and reducing the amount they're bidding for the 36-month product, such that we go from having excess supply to not having enough tranches, then some withdrawn tranches will be retained. These tranches are retained in order of exit price from lowest to highest. Now, whether or not that withdrawn tranche is retained, the eligibility associated with that tranche is lost at the point where that tranche is withdrawn. So even if this bidder's withdrawn tranche is retained, the bidder's eligibility will decrease from 32 to 31. The next slide provides another example of when a bidder will be asked to provide some additional information when submitting its bid. This slide provides an example of switching, where a bidder reallocates tranche's bid on one product to another. However, you see here that the bidder is switching into two products simultaneously, where it's reducing the number of tranches it's bidding on the 36-month product from 10 to 8, while at the same time, the bidder is increasing the number of tranches it's bidding on the 12-month product from 12 to 13, and increasing the number of tranches it's bidding on the 24-month product from 10 to 11. In this example, the total number of tranches bid across all products, 32, does not change. Tranches are simply being reallocated. When a bidder reduces the number of tranches bid on one product and increases the number of tranches bid on two products, the bidder will be asked for a switching priority. And this means that if both tranches cannot be switched, then the switching priority indicates to which product that one tranche should be switched. Here, the bidder assigns a switching priority of 1 to the 12-month product. So if both tranches cannot be switched and only one tranche will be permitted to switch, the one tranche that can be switched will be switched to the 12-month product. So 1 is the highest switching priority. Similarly to when a withdrawn tranche would be retained, a switch can be denied if, as a result of other bidders switching and or withdrawing tranches from, in this case, the 36-month product, we go from having excess supply to not having enough tranches to fill the target for the 36-month product. In that case, the first tranches that are retained to fill the tranche target are any withdrawn tranches from that product in order of exit price. And if that's still not sufficient to fill the target for the 36-month product, then switches are denied at the prices at which they were last freely bid, which is the price of the prior round. The last example we'll review where a bidder will need to provide additional information when submitting its bid is when a bidder is switching and withdrawing at the same time. In this example, you can see that the bidder is withdrawing because it's reducing the total number of tranches bid across all products from 32 to 31. So the bidder is withdrawing one tranche. Now you can see the bidder is also switching as the number of tranches bid for the 12-month product is increasing. So the bidder is decreasing the number of tranches bid on two products while also increasing the number of tranches bid on one product. In this case, the bidder will be asked to designate which tranche is being withdrawn. Now, looking at this bid, we know that the bidder is withdrawing one tranche, and we know one tranche is being switched to the 12-month product. However, we don't know whether the tranche being withdrawn is from the 24-month product or from the 36-month product. And we don't know whether the tranche being switched is from the 24-month product or the 36-month product. So the bidder must specify which tranche, either the one tranche from the 24-month product or the one tranche from the 36-month product, is the one being withdrawn. And the reason this is important is that the one tranche that is designated as the tranche that's being withdrawn is the tranche for which the bidder can provide an exit price. And in this example, the bidder is designating the tranche coming out of the 36-month product as the withdrawn tranche. Now that we've reviewed some bid scenarios, we'll discuss some differences in the information reported to bidders in later rounds compared to the information provided to bidders in the reporting phase of round one. Now, starting in round two, a bidder will still receive information about its own bid, but this information will now also include, to the extent the bidder is requesting tranches be withdrawn, whether those tranches are retained, and to the extent the bidder was switching, whether any of those switches were denied. The bidder is still provided with a range of total excess supply, as well as the going prices for the next round. Now, how does the auction end? The auction will continue as long as there is positive total excess supply, or in other words, when the total number of tranches bid across all products is greater than the auction volume. The auction will close on all products at the same time, and a single uniform price will be determined for each of the products. And this is called the auction clearing price for each of the products. Bidding on all products will stop at the same time, and all bidders that win tranches for a product will get the same price for that product. The clearing price for a product is the lowest price at which the tranche target for that product is filled. The final price for a product could be the going price for the last round, but it could also be an exit price if, when filling the tranche target, the lowest price at which the tranche target is filled for a product is an exit price, or it could be the price of a prior round if it's a price that's associated with a denied switch. Now, this slide provides an example of the auction closing rules. And just for illustrative purposes, we're just going to look at a single product, say the 12-month product. So in this case, we'll assume that the prices for the other two products have stopped ticking down, and we'll focus just on one product. Now, the target for the product shown here is 17 tranches. And you'll see in the number bid column that the total number of tranches bid across all bidders fell from 19 to 14, so the auction will close. To fill the target of 17 tranches, again, let's say for the 12-month product, we'll first take the 14 tranches bid at the round 12 going price. But we're still short 3 tranches, so we will need to retain some of the withdrawn tranches, and the exit prices submitted by the bidders will be used to set the auction clearing price. To decide which of the tranches will be retained, we'll consider the exit prices from lowest to highest. We need to retain 3 tranches total to fill the target. We'll first select the 2 tranches with the lowest exit price of $95.47. This is from bidder A. And now we're still short 1 tranche. We'll then select the tranche with the next lowest exit price, which is the single tranche withdrawn by bidder B with an exit price of $95.85. We've now filled the tranche target of 17 tranches for this 12-month product, and the auction clearing price for the 12-month product will be equal to bidder B's exit price of $95.85. We will not retain any of the withdrawn tranches from bidder C, and all bidders who are holding tranches of the 12-month product will receive the same clearing price for the 12-month product of $95.85. Before wrapping up the presentation today, I'll provide just a few more reminders about the auction. First, bidders will have an opportunity to practice submitting bids using the auction software in a trial auction on October 24th. And during the auction, if you're experiencing any technical difficulties, the backup procedure for submitting your bids is to do so by phone. Technical assistance will be available to take your bid over the phone and submit it into the software on your behalf. The last bid submitted and verified in the bidding phase and processed by the auction software is the bid that counts. So a backup bid processed over the phone will only count if it's entered and verified by the technical assistant in the bidding phase and processed by the auction software. So it's the bidder's responsibility to provide a complete bid consistent with the CBP rules and to get the bid in on time. For purposes of using the online auction software, please be sure that you're using any of the supported web browsers listed here and that you have a stable internet connection. And if you need to reach us, please contact the auction manager team by email at aep-cbp@nira.com. And again, if you intend to submit a pre-bid letter of credit as pre-bid security, it must be sent electronically to this same email address.